Morning, how are you, Joe?
You all would have loved it yesterday. We had a lot of fun. Well, it turned into a skating rink.
See.
It was a rain ice storm. It was sucking out of.
I think I'll be Michael on. You know, like, thanks, but no thanks. So initially, you know, I was going to discuss the Shira for this week's parasha, but with my apologies, I realized that we discussed it at great length 2 years ago. And I thought we'd try something a little bit different. You know, in this week's parsha, we have the concept of hachana, of preparing for Shabbos. On Erev Shabbos, we take a double portion of man, and the Torah says the hechinu, that there has to be hachana. Rashi, at the beginning of Masechta Beitzah, says that the concept of muktzah is derived from that pasuk. Rashi seems to assume that muktzah is doraisa. That's not so simple, because the sugi that we want to see today in Perek Kol HaKelim at the end of Masechta Shabbos seems to be indicative that muktzah is only derabanan. But having said that, I want to dedicate today's discussion to an introduction to muktzah, but more specifically, to focus our attention on muktzah, machmas chisaron kis. Now, I have a list here of a number of cases that might come under muktzah, machmas chisaron kis, and hopefully by the end of the shiur, we'll be more in a position, a better position to evaluate them. Number one, we have paper that I use for printing. Number two, we have the case of envelopes that haven't been used yet, that are designated to be used for sending mail or stamps. What about legal documents or financial documents? Here in Israel, we have what's called a Tudat Zahut. Right, an identity card, I guess you'd call it. We have very heavy kalim that nobody wants to move because they put it away in a specific place and it's meant to stay there for a very long time. What about pesedik kalim during the course of the year? Nobody wants to mess around with those because we want to make sure that they still remain kosher to Pesach. What about paintings that are hung on the wall? Or, for example, various kinds of utensils that have no function other than to beautify the house. They may be very expensive and nobody's too excited about moving them around. Or, let's say you have utensils and it's your business to rent them out. That's what you do to make money. And now you decide, okay, I'm missing a certain kli, I don't have an extra bowl, I'm going to use that bowl or that spoon for my own table because I need it. But in my initial thought process on Erev Shabbos, if you would ask me, are you going to use those kelim on Shabbos? The answer would be a flat no, because I want to use them for rental purposes. There are all sorts of glassware that are very, very sensitive. And if they fall, of course, they're fragile, they shatter. And if they're expensive enough, that might come under muktzah. So as I said at the outset, we have here a wide variety of cases and common situations that come up almost on a Shabbos basis once a week. And therefore we want to get a grasp, an insight into what muktzah is. Now, As a way of introduction, because I want to come back to this point a little bit later, generally speaking, when we speak about muktzah, we're talking about an iser tiltul, meaning you're allowed to touch it, you're allowed to lean on it, as long as you don't move it from one place to the other. However, in this context of Mukta Machmas Chisaron Kis, I'm not sure about it, but I think perhaps there might be an Isur Negia that you're not allowed to even touch Mukta Machmas Chisaron Kis. So let me just throw that out in the introduction. When does the story begin? It dates back at least as early as Nehemiah, which means the period of time before Bayesheni, and that's the Gemara here that you have on your first source, Kufchav Gimel Amid Beis. And Nehemiah made a gzera. He instituted a classical siag laTorah, gzera l'schachonim, in order to protect the Shabbos, and he prohibited tiltul kelim. Now, I'm not sure that tiltul kelim is the same as muktzah. In fact, I'm almost convinced that it's not the same as muktzah, because I think the Isur muktzah came way before Nehemiah. But the Isur of muktzah that came before Nehemiah, I don't think included kelim. Utensils, by definition, are considered muchan. Why? Because they are designated for a function. They have a purpose. They have a use. Again, it could be that that use is not appropriate for Shabbos, and therefore it might be what's called a klisha malachto le'isur, but nevertheless, that, as we'll soon see, is included in the gzeir of Nehemiah, and was never part of the original isur mukta. And the nafkamina here is going to be that Nehemiah and his gzeira is going to be very limited, meaning there are going to be many, many situations in which the restriction of tiltul kelim is lifted. So, for example, you're familiar with concepts called litzarach gufo, litzarach makomo, and we'll talk about those concepts. These are all heterim within the context of the gzeiras chachamim of Nehemiah. I don't believe that those heterim of litzarach gufo, litzarach makomo would be relevant to the original muktzah. When I say the original muktzah, the muktzah which Rashi seems to classify as an isur d'oraisa that applies to things other than kelim. For example, when we talk about eitzim v'avanim, that I'm not talking about a stone that you designated before Shabbos for a certain purpose, maybe to stop your door, but your average stone that you meet up on the street. Again, maybe in Canada you don't see that many stones on the streets, but here in Israel we see them all the time. They're full of stones. And things like pieces of wood or branches that fell on the ground that have no designation for any purpose, they're not kelim, those are probably included in what I call muktzah d'oraisa, which Rashi says derived from a pasuk in our parsha, ve'hechinu es asher yaviu. Those Rishonim who reject Rashi and assume that Muktzah as an absolute rule is always the Rabbanon, they claim that the Hichinu es Asher Yaviu is a Kiyum, but not an Isur. Rashi understands that the Hichinu es Asher Yaviu means that if you don't prepare it and don't designate it before Shabbos, then it's Asur. And therefore Rashi produces what we call an Isur Muktzah d'oraisa that's derived from the parasha. But again, we have to always keep this in mind. This, I think, is the key of keys. A fundamental distinction between Eitzim, Vavanim, Afar, V'Efer, all those things that aren't Kelim, as opposed to Kelim. So what we're seeing here in the Sugya on Kufchav Gimel, in Nehemiah's Gzera, is an Isur Tiltul Kelim. Clearly, Lesman de Polig, that's going to be Durabonon. And the Gemara tells us what moved Nehemiah to institute, together of course with his Bezdin, this Gzera and this Isur of Tiltul Kelim. And the answer is that the Gemara says the Jews were being mezalzel, they were careless about Isur Shabbos, and the Chachamim wanted to come down hard on them and in a sense restrict their liberty. Again, you and I might say that today that would have the opposite effect, because the more you limit a person, the more he tends to rebel and reject. But back in those days, apparently the Jews got the message. Now, how far did Nehemiah go with this gzera? And if you take a look in the Mishnah, in Kol HaKelim, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kol HaKelim Nitom Chutz Min HaMeser HaGadol V'Yosei Shal Machresha. We're going to see that these two Kelim are not included in any of the Heterim that apply to the Gzera of Nehemiah. Those two Kelim are very, very severe, and they come under the special category called Chisaron Kis, which basically means that these are very sensitive utensils, very expensive, and if you use them, you risk losing them, destroying them, or if it's sharp, it becomes dull by use. Now, if you'll take a look on the bottom of Kufchav Gimel Amid Beis, Omer Rab Chanina, about five lines up from the bottom, Bimei Nehemia Ben Chachalia Nishneis Mishnezu. And the Gemara goes on to tell us that initially Nehemia went very, very far with his strict gzera and included all kalim, with the exception of two kalim. There were three kalim, which were absolutely necessary for eating on Shabbos. He couldn't go as far as to include those three kalim in the Isur. Those were absolutely necessary to allow, to facilitate Onik Shabbos. But all kalim were included in this concept of the Gzeres Chachamim of Tiltol. And Rashi explains that the reason why he was so machmir is because the language of Rashi is Kidei Ligdar Geder Lahachmir Beisur Shabbos Mipnei Shehayu Mekilim Ba, because they were so Mekil in Shabbos, and therefore he was very Machmir and he prohibited all Kalim. The Gemara goes on to tell us that he accomplished his goal, and the Jewish people began to become more serious and more meticulous about observing the Shabbos. So therefore, he loosened the reins a little bit, and he allowed moving kalim whenever it was necessary, which is called Litzorach Gufo or Litzorach Makomo. And that was stage number two. Now, how far did he go in loosening the Isur, the original Isur? So that's a machlokus between Abaye and Rava. And this you'll see at the very first of the wide lines. Abaye says, what does it mean, hitiru, that he loosened the reins, so to speak, he allowed more, the chazru vitiru, and then when he saw that Bnei Yisrael was still continuing to be observant and more observant, chazru vitiru again. Omar Abaye, hitiru davar shemalachto leheter, his first heter was that he allowed moving kalim, which are designated for permissible use on Shabbos, as opposed to something like a, let's say, a writing utensil, which of course is Meleches Ksiva. But he only permitted it Litzorech Gufo if you actually needed the kli. You were using the kli as it is. So then at this particular stage, says Abaye, anything that was you, what was moved, but not Litzorach Gufo, would be Asur. And then in the second Kula, in the second Heter, Chazu Vitiru Davish Machlet Litzorach Mekomo. Now, Nehemiah adds another Heter, again, limited to a Kli Shemalachta Leheter, and that is Litzorach Mekomo. I don't need the Kli itself, but I need to evacuate the location, the place that the Kli is occupying. I need that space. This is very common when we clear off the table from its kalim because we want to use the table. Then Chazur Vitiro, in the last stage, according to Abaye, Nehemia was matir davar shemalachto leisur, even a kli that is designated for isur, for example, a hammer or a pen, or something along that line, Litzorech Gufo, but only if I need it for something that's heter. So for example, if I have a knife that's usually used for cutting in the process of weaving and things like that, which is a klisha matalisa, but I want to use the knife to cut my meat or to cut my bread, that's called litzar gufo. And Abai says litzar gufo in litzar makomo lo. In other words, at this point, there was no heter, and this is the final point, right? In other words, there was no heter beyond this, to move a kli shemalato le'isa litzar makomo. It was only permissible to move, and for that matter, to use the kli shemalato le'isa litzar gufo. And now if you fast forward to Rava, Amale Rava 2 lines later, that's not what it means. Rava says that the original heter was both Litzarech Gufo and Litzarech Makomo, and that was with regard to a Kli, Shemalachta Lehet. There was no need for a second heter of Litzarech Makomo. Litzarech Makomo has the same status as Litzarech Gufo. And then in the second stage, they were matir, even if I don't need the kli at all, I don't need the kli for itself, nor do I need the kli to vacate its location that it's occupying. But why am I moving the kli? Because the kli is in a dangerous, precarious position. The sun is beating down on the kli, and I want to take it, that's called Michama Litzel. And therefore, in the second stage, they were matir a kli shemalachto leheter for everything. Bein litzar gufo, bein litzar makomo, and even michamo litzel. Now, we're left with a davar shemalachto leisur. And a davar shemalachto leisur is absolutely prohibited at this point. Now comes along the third level of heter, and they were matir a tiltal of davar shemalachto leisur, bein litzar gufo, bein litzar makomo, because as we said at the outset, Rava is of the opinion that litzar gufo and litzar makomo are one and the same in terms of the mishkal, in terms of the weight of the heter. But what they left with, what they were left with is michama litzel lo. That if you're not using the kli itself for something that's permissible, obviously on Shabbos, if you're not moving the kli because you need the space that it's occupying, you're only moving the kli for litzarech hakli in order to protect the kli, because otherwise it's going to cost you a bundle to replace the kli. That's asur again in a kli shemalato le'isur. Now if. And we'll try to prove this. We pass like Rava, which is always the rule, and it's going to apply here as well. Then we have a blanket, all-inclusive heter for tiltul on a kli that's malachto leheter. We have a limited heter in the case of tiltul kli shemalachto leisur, and that heter applies only litzar gufo and litzar makomo, but not michama litzel. So many poskim will say that you have to decide for yourself if you're moving a kli, even if it's a kli shemalach leheter, why are you moving the kli? There's got to be some tzorech for moving the kli. It might be litzorech gufo, it might be litzorech makomo. I pick up the spoon because I'm eating my soup. I pick up the spoon because I want to clear off my table. I pick up the spoon because the sun is beating down heavily on the spoon. But what about a person who's sitting at a table and he's just moving silverware around? You know, I don't know, maybe it's just a nervous habit of his. Well, some would say that that itself is a tzorech. But other poskim will say that that's not called a tzorech. You're not gaining anything in real concrete terms by moving the spoon. And you should always be aware of those poskim whenever you move a kli. And if it's a kli shemalachta le'isur, then you have to make sure that you're using it either because you need it for some sort of heter, litzarech gufo, or you're moving it because you need the makom that it's occupying. But if you're moving it to protect the kli, you know, you're afraid it'll get stolen because it's outdoors in the backyard. Let's say, for example, if you could imagine that you have a barbecue and you don't want to leave it in the hot sun. It's one of those hot July days and it's Shabbos and it's the sun is beating down on. Now that's a kli shemalachto le'isur. Assuming it's not chisar and kis, which we'll get to in just a minute. then if the sun is beating down on a Kli Shemalach Tol Issa and you want to take it inside your house on Shabbos in order to protect it, you're not allowed to do that. And that's what we get from this Gemara. How do we paskin la'alocha? And for this we want to look in Shulchan Aruch, which you'll see on page 4 if you have the Mar Makomos. And it says the following. It says that, just 1 second, let me get my orientation here. First we'll start with the Torah actually on page 3. And the Torah says, Kol HaKelim Nitol B'Shabbos. Okay. And he's going to say the following. This is in Sif Gimel, Kli Shemalachto Le'isur, Yochol Le'taltalo Bein Litzarech Gufo, Bein Litzarech Mekomo. That's against Abaye. Because Abaye is of the opinion that Kli Shemalachto Le'isur is Mutav Etiltal only Litzarech Gufo, but not Litzarech Mekomo. Litzarech Gufo could go Kurna Shal Nefachim. Oh, Shal Zahavim, these are the type of hammers that are usually used by carpenters, or by those who, you know, who shape the gold, and he wants to use it to crack his egozim, or kardum, he wants to use a shovel that's usually used for raking or hoeing, lachtoch bo tveil, he wants to cut his food, that's called litzarech gufo, so it's a klishim lachtol yisul, litzarech gufo is mutter, or litzarech makomo, kigon shitzarech lishtamish b'makom shakli munach sham. Avolim eino tzarech gufo velolim komo el sherotzel otzio misham b'nei sheyorei sheyishover sham o yigarev sham. If he's protecting it from the sun or from any other destruction, then it's asur. That's what we have here in the Torah, and that codifies the halacha like Rav. So the good news is that the original all-inclusive Easter of Tiltul Kalim, with the exception of 3 Kalim, like a knife and a spoon, that Nechemi instituted, that was loosened up. We paskin like Rava, that Litzarech Gufo, Litzarech Mekomo, even a Kli Shemalach Tol Issur is Mutav Etiltal. The only Easter that's left as far as Tiltul Kalim so far is the Easter of Michama Litzel in the case of a Kli Shemalach Tol Issur. However, if you take a look at the Mishnah here on Daf Kuf Chav Gimel Amid Beis, here we have Rabbi Yossi telling us that Kol HaKelim Nitolim Chutz Min HaMeser HaGadol. This is some sort of a large saw. And the other example he gives here is Yasei Chel Machresha. They used to have these different kinds of metal teeth that they would use together in a keli. And that keli served for charisha, and such a thing is asur betiltal. Why is it asur betiltal? So if you look at Rashi on the Mishnah, Rashi says, Yosei shel machreshu kli gadol ha'asui kisakin shebo osim charitzim shel telem. Right, that's where they make the furrows in the ground with these very sharp pieces of knives, kind of the triangular knives. The Hanoch in these cases, kapit alayhu umiyached lahem makom delochazu limalacha acheres. Rashi tells us that with regard to these kalim, he's makpid. He's very careful. He has great interest that no one should use these kalim. They're designated for certain usages, and that's what they're for. When we need them, we'll use them. When we don't need them, we don't go near them. Umiyached lahem makom. Now, is this another condition that Rashi adds? When does it become asur? And asur here means afilu, litzorech gufo, and litzorech makomo. It's an absolute isur. Now, this absolute isur, all-encompassing, reminds us of perhaps the original Iser Muktzah that predates Nehemiah. As I said before, with regard to Eitzim Vavonim, Ofer V'Efer, that was an Iser Muktzah even before Nehemiah came along, possibly even an Iser De'oraisa. And here, if you take a look on page 4, the Shulchan Aruch in Shin Ches, anybody who's a Baki in Shin Ches deserves smicha just for that. And he opens up Siman Shin Ches by saying, Kol HaKelim Nitolim B'Shabbos Chutz Mi Mukta Machmas Chisaron Kis. And that's, in the language of the Mishnah, these two cases of Meser HaGadol and Yosechel Machresha. In the language of the Shulchan Aruch, the examples he gives are Sakin Shel Shechita. You don't want to mess around with a Chalif knife that has to be absolutely sharp, without any nicks in them. I don't know if you gentlemen ever saw Bedikas HaSakin. Do you ever see that? I saw it actually in Budapest, in Hungary. In the shul in Budapest, the Rav asked the Shochet to bring his knife and he checked it. And believe it or not, he asked him on three occasions in the 2 days I was in Budapest to sharpen up the knife before he allowed him to use that knife. Oshel Mila, of course, has to be very, very sharp. And he gives all sorts of examples of knives and utensils that are very expensive, very sensitive, and you don't want to use them. But look at the next three words. He says, Asur l'taltolam b'Shabbos. You're not allowed to move them. Afilu tzach makomo l'tzach gufo. An absolute isur mukta. We're not talking about tiltul kalim. Again, when we talk about the isur tiltul kalim, we know that even in case of a klish and lachtal isur, you're allowed to be metaltul l'tzach gufo l'tzach makomo. Just not nicham l'tzel. When we're talking about a mukta machmas chisaron kis, we're not talking about an isur tiltul in the classical sense of kalim, because kalim you're allowed to move on Shabbos, even pens and even give me some more examples of mukta of kalim shemalachto leisur. Anybody come up with any common cases? Maybe car keys, maybe. Those are all kalim. And with regard to kalim, there's a heter tiltul in those specific cases. Now we're talking about an absolute isur tiltul without any heter, even though we're talking about kalim. That's the... Rabosa, I want you to appreciate the paradox of this category, this halachic entity, which begins Siman Shin Ches, called Mukta Machmas Chisaron Kis. On the one hand, we're talking about kalim. If it's a kli, it's not mukta. And on the other hand, we're talking about an isur tiltul. Well, if there's an isur tiltul and it's a kli, then it's certainly mutul itzach makom itzach gufo. And here, the halacha has generated a very fascinating category called kalim with an absolute isur tiltul with no hetul itzach gufo itzach makom. Now, here I want to share with you a Rambam. Give me just 5 minutes, Dan, and then the floor is yours. Just so I get, you know, otherwise I'm going to lose my old trend. The Rambam writes, okay, let me just read to you the Rambam. I have a Rambam here. This is Perek Chavav, Mil Shabbos Halacha Yud Beis. He's talking about a certain kli which is used by the Kofsim. Kofsim are the launderers. And he writes about this kli, which is called a machbesh. I guess it's used to sort of like flatten out the garments in the process of cleaning them. That's mem chaf beis shin. He writes, machbesh al akovsim lo yigabo mipneshu mukta machmas chisaron kis. Does that not make your ears like stand on end over here? What do you mean lo yigabo? We just finished saying that the Isur of Mukta is an Isur tiltul and not an Isur negia. But yet the Rambam says lo yigabo. Now, some of the Mepharshim want to say the Rambam is lav dafka. What he meant by lo yigabo is that he's moving it. But if you take a look in the next line in the Rambam, the Rambam says, "Ubegize tzemer." We're talking about wool that was sheared off the back of the sheep. Ein metaltel and also b'neishu makpid alehem. All of a sudden, the Rambam, in the same breath, instead of reiterating ein nogimbo, he writes ein metaltel and also. So I heard from my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, Zichron Levrach, the following. He said that within the entire constellation of what we call Muktzah, there are two fundamentally different concepts. There's one concept called Chisaron Hachonah, the lack of Hachonah. The Torah says, V'yichinu es asher yaviu. Fine. If something is not Mukhan, then you're not allowed to move it. However, in that category, there's a machlokus between Reb Shimon and Reb Yehuda all over the place. You know, you'll find it five times in Masechta Shabbos, where Reb Yehuda is machmir and Reb Shimon is mekil. All those cases, so claims Reb Soloveitchik, are kalim. Reb Shimon lesley muktzah. What does it mean, Reb Shimon lesley muktzah? Of course, Reb Shimon has muktzah. In Avonim, and in Ofar, and in Eitzim, for sure Reb Shimon holds from muktzah. When does Reb Shimon reject muktzah? When you're talking about kalim or ochlim. If you have something that's edible, or you have something that has a function, it's a utensil, it has a shem kli. And if you want to know what a shem kli is, ayin mesecta kalim. You know, spend about a year or two of your life on the Masechta Kelim. I wish you a lot of luck. And then you'll figure out what constitutes a kli. So Reb Shimon says a kli does not need hachana. So the Rav said, why does Reb Shimon hold a kli does not need hachana? Because it's muchan. By definition, its hachana is built in to the object itself. What does the shame kli mean? The shame kli mean it has a function, and therefore it's muchan. Rabbi Yehuda says no. There are many kalim that aren't, even though they are functional, but they're still muktzah. Why? So Rav Soloveitchik claims that according to Rabbi Yehuda, ve'hichinu es esher yaviu means it's not enough to say it's muchan mi'elav, that automatically it's muchan. Rather, Rabbi Yehuda went very far and said, you have to be mechin it. You have to actually have achana. Just that Rabbi Yehuda assumes that anything that you would normally use is assumed, it's a given that you are mechin it. You don't have to walk around the house on Erev Shabbos, according to Rabbi Yehuda, and point to every single keli and say, hinini muchan, I'm being mechil the keli. But rather, by virtue of the fact that the kli is going to be used, or the ochel is going to be eaten, that itself is a maisa hachana b'kuvaseh. Reb Shimon doesn't require maisa hachana. Reb Shimon says, it's muchan. Why is it muchan? Because it's an ochel. Why is it muchan? Because it's a kli. I don't need to be making it. The cheft itself is muchan. Whereas Reb Shimon requires a maisa ha'adam to be making it. Ve'hichinu es asher yaviu, otherwise it's muktzah. However, Reb Yehuda agrees, I don't have to actually go out and do an act of hachana. The very fact that it's in my das, that I will use it or eat it, that's enough to be an assumed maisa hachana. However, if it's something that I may see das, meaning something that I would never think of using, let's say, for example, I have kalim that I want to sell on the market, or let's say, for example, the case of grogros vitzi mukim, I've placed it up on top of the roof so that the sun will beat down and it'll ripen so that I can eat it as a dried fruit. In the middle, while it's up on top of the roof, it becomes a little bit sour. Again, it's still edible. Reb Shimon is matir it, lesley muktzah, but Reb Yehuda asses it, because Reb Yehuda says in such a case, he's meisiach das. And if he's meisiach das, then poka le hachanoso. There's no hachana in something that you meisiach das from. Now, the Gemara establishes that even Reb Shimon, who holds lesley muktzah, because as we said before, a kli, by definition, is considered muchan mitzad atzmo, it's muchan me'elov. Yet the Gemara establishes that in the case of muktzah machmas chisaron kis, where you have something that's very sensitive and very expensive, even Reb Shimon agrees it's muktzah. And not only muktzah, but in gansin muktzah, the complete muktzah gomor, without any het to tiltel, because the het to tiltel applies only within the framework of the iser tiltel kalim as exerid rabbanon of the chemya. And there was all sorts of etarim of Lutzak Guf, Lutzak Makomo. Klisha Malachta Le'isur. I'm sorry. Klisha Malachta Le'isur is included in the Gzera of Nehemiah with the etarim of Lutzak Guf, Lutzak Makomo. But if we're talking about Machmas Chisar and Kis, then we're talking about the real Makoy Mokta, not the Isur Gzeres Chachamim of Nehemiah of Tiltul Kalim. We're talking about Mukta Mamish, the Nafkamina being that there's no Heter, Litzach Gufa, Litzach Makoma. Why? Why does Rav Shimon all of a sudden turn around and join the, you know, the opposing forces here? Why all of a sudden he's on the side of Rav Yehuda and he has Mukta in a Kalim? Why? So the Rav said an unbelievable chiddush. The Rav said that according to Rav Shimon, every kli is considered muchan me'elav. It's assumed to be muchan, but I can be makta a kli midaiti. I can point to a kli on Erev Shabbos, and I will say nobody use this kli. This kli is sensitive. It's expensive. Stay away. You know, like we put on the grass, you know, stay off the grass. So you put up a sign, stay off this kli. This is a hammer that's very expensive, very sensitive. You ask a dentist about his dental utensils. You don't mess around with those, right? You ask a surgeon about his surgical equipment, etc., etc. Says Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Shimon agrees to Rav Yehuda that there's something called haktsah midaito shel adam. When a man is maktsah something midas, this is going to be the whole issue. If you, let's say you have a rip in your clothing, and you take that cloak and you throw it into the rubbish, as the Brits here call it, that's called maktsah midaito. He went ahead and he pushed it away. The big question is going to be Grogos Mitzimukim, because there Lechora he was Maksim Hidaito the very moment he placed it on top of the roof. Okay, don't ask me that kasha, because you'll get me very confused with that kasha. But
so you're saying Chisor Kis is
Maksim? Oh, that's what we want to say. That even though Reb Shimon argues Reb Yehuda, and Reb Shimon holds you don't need a Hachana in the positive sense in order to be Mafkia Mukta, because if it's a Kli, if it's an Ochel, ipso facto it's automatically considered Mukhan Mielov, I don't have to actively involve myself in a Maisa Hachana. Nevertheless, Reb Shimon agrees that if I take a Kli and a Maksa the Kli Midaiti, then it becomes Mukta, and Reb Shimon has no problem with that. And Rabose, keep in mind, when we say it becomes Mukta, we're talking about the real McCoy Mukta, not the Issa Tiltul Kalim. Don't confuse that. For example, if on Shabbos, let me ask you this, Joe. On Shabbos, I decide I need to pick up a stone in order to sit on it. Let's say it's a flat kind of stone, or I need a stone in order to stop my door. Am I allowed to move that stone on Shabbos? Absolutely not. This is a common mistake. If you know anyone who makes that mistake, straighten them out. Because when we talk about stones that weren't prepared on Erev Shabbos, we're talking about the real Makoy Mukta. We're not talking about a kli. A stone is not a kli. Here we have a case of Mukta Machmas Chisar and Kis, which is a kli, and yet it's bona fide Mukta. So the Rav had problems with that. He couldn't figure it out. He couldn't figure out why Rav Shimon would be Moda when Rav Shimon rejects Mukta. And his answer was that there's something called Ahaktsa Midas. We have now two polar extremes. According to Rav Yehuda, in order for something to be not Mukta, I need a Hachana Midas. According to Rav Shimon, I don't need a Hachana Midas. There's something called a Hachana Me'elov, but that's generated by a Shem Ochel or a Shem Kli. But Rav Shimon on the other polar extreme has something called a Haktsah Midas. Oh, wait a minute. Now's the punchline, baby. Says the Rav, if what generates Mukta is the Haktsah Midas, in the case of Chisar and Kis, then what did he have in his mind? Did he have in his mind A or B? A, don't move this. It's got to be stationary. As soon as you move it around, you know, you might shake it up and it might fall and break. Or did he have in mind, don't even touch it? As soon as you touch it, it might get ruined. The Rav wanted to suggest that that's the Rambam in Perek Chavav. In the case of Machbe Shel Kovzim Lo Yiga Behem. Why? Because what creates the Mukta? The Haktza Midas. In the case of Tzemer, what creates the Mukta? Haktza Midas. In the case of Kovzim, the Haktza Midas was on Negia. What I was Machbe on is that no one should touch it. It's such a sensitive utensil. In a case of Gizei Tzemer, there my Haktzomidas is no one should move it around. I want it to stay in its place. David?
Yeah, so the Haktzomidas, does that have to occur before Shkia or not?
Well, then that's a sugya called Yesh Muktzel Chatzi Shabbos or Ein Muktzel Chatzi Shabbos.
Lots of asking.
I don't remember how we paskin. I mean, honestly, mukta is very complicated. And you know, I only picked up mukta because my good buddies in California decided that they would prepare all these marmakomos, about 20, how many pages? About 13 pages of marmakomos for Parshas Beshalach. So I figured, look, if I'm not going to learn the Shir Sayam, why not spend a little time with mukta? So you're asking me. So let me tell you this, David. The classical case of mukta is, ask me Erev Shabbos, as I enter into Shabbos, what do I want to do? I'm a dentist, and I have these very sensitive utensils. I don't want anyone moving them around. That's one thing. I might have something that's so sensitive, I don't want anyone touching them. You touch it, and it gets ruined. Again, it's very difficult for the halacha, you know, to figure out in every classification of kalim, and we have to rack our brains and figure it out. But what I'm trying to convey to you is that there's a whole new concept here of muktzah that we've never encountered before. We never had an Isur Negia in muktzah. A person, for example, wants to sit on a car on Shabbos. That's mutter. A person wants to lean up against the tree on Shabbos. That's mutter. Right? You're not moving anything. You're just touching something. There was never an Isur Negia. There is an Isur Negia that they used to talk about to the Bnei Akiva kids. But I'm not talking about that Isur Negia. That was a joke and nobody caught it. Because nobody here was in Bnei Akiva. Okay, fine. I'll let you get away with that. Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
No, I'm just trying to understand the concept of muksa. Is this idea of Negia being part of muksa, is this part of Nehemiah's
Gazette? No. This is pre Nehemiah, because we're going back to the pasuk Ve'chinu es asher yaviu. Reb Shimon is holding Lesley muksa, which means that if you have a kli, or if you have an ochel, then there is a ve'chinu es asher yaviu, not b'toras maisa gavra, but b'toras chefta. If you have eitzim vavonim, then there was no ve'chinu es asher yaviu. That's muksa d'oraisa, Rashi says in Masech the Beitz and up Beis Amid Beis. Now what we're saying is that if you are makta something midas, that becomes eitzim vavonim. And the nafkamina is going to be litzarech gufo litzarech makomo. When we're talking about Nehemiah, again, Joe, this is very crucial. Again, if you know all this, then you're probably saying, Rabbi Berzon, why are you talking to me about something that I knew since I was a cheder yingle, you know, at the age of 5? So you'll be meichel me. But just in case, chas v'shalom, you don't know this, you got to know it. And what you got to know is the following. As soon as you hear the words, litzarech gufo, litzarech makomo, you know, just press a button on your computer, you're talking about gzeira derabanan of Nehemiah. But when you're talking about something which is asur, even litzarech gufo and litzarech makomo, you're talking about mukta mamish. And mukta mamish means that you are makta it. According to Rabbi Yehud, if you aren't making it, that's enough to make it muktzah. If I have a hesek hadas, that's enough to make it muktzah. That's Rabbi Yehuda Shita. And
just the parameters.
Yeah. Sorry, I got a little bit excited here because I don't know if you can hear me. You're so far away. Yeah.
No, I understand. Just the parameters of the touching it. You know, the parameters of muktzah, what it entails.
That's something. I mean, how can you?
Okay, listen, Joe. This piece from my Rebbe, as far as the Diuk and the Rambam, you know, next time you see a, you know, utensil that belongs to a launderer and you want to move it on Shabbos or even touch on Shabbos, then you'll come to me and I'll show you the, you know, this Diuk and the Rambam, and he'll, you know, Joe. That wasn't my point. I was just using that Rambam in the way that Rav Soloveitchik interpreted that Rambam as a pedagogical tool to show you that there's some concept called Haktzah Midas. And therefore, when we learn Muktzah, these are the key categories. There's Hachana Midas, there's Haktzah Midas, and then there's this entire, what I call, you know, twilight zone in between. On the one hand, I wasn't making it. On the other hand, I wasn't mocked it. I'm not intending to use it, but it certainly has a function on Shabbos. That becomes a machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Bobby, how you doing?
Baruch Hashem. The Haktzah Midas for these things, you actually need the das to do it. So, for example, the tools of a dentist. Is it automatically Haktzah Midas because of the nature of the implement?
Oh, beautiful question. Bobby, here's where the Rav comes along and he reads the Rashi. And again, let's go back to the Rashi. Rashi says on the Mishnah of Rav Yossi, the Hanoch Kopet Alayhu, period. Okay, now I'm going to make believe for a moment that was the end of the Rashi. So the Rav says, Kol Amosif Goreha. Rashi didn't have to say another word. Why did Rashi have to add a whole thing, which we'll read in just a minute? Rashi just should have said, Daha Kopet Alayhu. Ask the dentist if he allows, you know, any Yonkel Beryl to come along and start using his utensils, even during the week. I'm not even talking about Shabbos. And the answer is, of course, not. Again, I don't know, we don't have any dentists here in the audience.
I would have interpreted the Rashi differently. I would have said that the evidence of Kapha Alayhu is that...
Excellent. So, Bobby, this is the gigantic controversy about Mukta Machmas Chisaron Kis. What does Rashi mean when he says the hamiyached le'makom? And Rashi repeats himself over and over again. Yesh darshim l'shvach, yesh darshim l'gnah. Some say that how do I know a person is machped about something? I need a simon l'davar. What's my simon l'davar? What's my barometer? What's my gili milsa? The answer is the hamiyached le'makom. But Rabosai, if you go with that approach, even if he wasn't miyachid le'makom, if I know for sure that he's makbid, that itself, ipso facto, generates muktamach mislisorin kis.
Then you may need das. Then you may need actually...
Correct. Correct. And his das is there. His das is there, believe me, from the beginning of the week. Because he doesn't want anyone going near it. The other way of learning Rashi, and this is how Rav Soloveitchik wanted to interpret Rashi, unfortunately he's in the mute, and I'll tell you why it's unfortunate, because it's a gewaldige kula, Rav Soloveitchik. He wanted to say, Doha miyached le'makom is not just a birul adover, it's not just a gili milsa, but it's a tnai. It's an actual condition. What makes it into, what generates the status of Muktzamach Masnisarkis, it was the Miyached Le'makom. When he's Miyached Le'makom, that becomes the Maisa Haktzah. And that's what engenders Muktzah. And Rabosai, the literature on this issue is very long and very wide. Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Igros Moshe wants to say that even if he wasn't Miyached Le'makom, but he's makpin on it, that itself engenders Muktzamach Masnisarkis Kiss. Rav Shlomo Zalman agreed with Rav Moshe Feinstein without even knowing about Rav Moshe Feinstein. And therefore it's quoted by Rav Neuver, Zichron Lebrach, he passed away not long ago, in the famous magnum opus on Hilchos Shabbos called Shmiras Shabbos Kehilchasa, which became like the, you know, the guru here in Israel, at least on Hilchos Shabbos. So you've got the Igros Moshe, you have the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa. And the Rav said that that's not really doing justice to the conceptual purpose that Rashi is trying to achieve. Now, I don't know if there are any questions at this point, because if I have some time to go on, I don't know, it's getting a little bit late, but I'm going to try to fit in one or two points over here. Okay? The Mishnah Brura on page 4, that's again Simon Shin Ches, Sifchat and Beis, you will see that he's of the opinion, Dibra Maskel Shemak Pidim Olav, which is sort of like the top of the bottom, if you know what I mean. He says, This is fascinating. The Mishnah Berurah says that even after the Shulchan Aruch codified explicitly a whole list of enumerated kelim that are chisar and kiss and therefore they're muktzah, says the Mishnah Berurah, wait a minute, maybe he's not makpid on it. And if he's not makpid, there is no muktzah. And he's basing himself on a Magen Avraham who establishes that it's the bailim over the kli that have exclusive rights to do a maisa haktzah. See, this fits in beautifully with our structure. Because if he doesn't belong to the gang, and he's not willing to be makta'it, then it's not mukta. And no one else can make it into mukta. Then he writes, V'kaved harbe, he says, V'kli, he wants to say that, V'komokam lo amrinan, V'pnei kvedusa, hu kovel o makam u makta. So he says that you can have certain very heavy kalim that nobody moves around because they're so heavy. You have to call the schleppers, you know, to move them. But he says that he didn't put it in that place because he doesn't want it to be moved from that place. And therefore, if he didn't do this in order to indicate his meticulous care, kedesh lo tipasev tiskalkel, then it's not mukta machmas kisar and kiss. So the fact that the Mechaber says that you can't move it mivnei kovdo because of its weight, that doesn't ipso facto make it into a haktzah midas. That might be just the reality of the nature of the kli, but that's not because he was makted. And the Mishnah Berurah is of the opinion that chisar and kiss, if you take a look on the top of the page, when he tries to define what chisar and kiss is, which is about in the middle of that long introduction, you know, it's very unusual. The Mishnah Berurah has a very long introduction here to Simon Shin Ches. He writes that Ratzaloma, what is chisar and kiss? He says Shemachmas Chashash Hefzed, who makpid aleim. He doesn't want to lose these kelim. Shalol Taltalam Umakta osam midato. Notice that he says makta osam midato, which again reflects, you know, you can read it and pass over it, but that's the essence of what we're talking about. And then if you look in the Bir Halach, which is on the bottom, he writes ubekulo hatam, in all these kalim, the reason why they're mukta. Now look at the Mishnah Berurah, the Bir Halacha, they came in the cup of life, miyachid lehu makom. So on the one hand, I was very excited about this Mishnah Berurah, because I thought, wow, he's making a big deal about miyachid lehu makom. But you know what, I'm not sure, because on second thought, Bobby, this might be your Gili Milsa, what I call, meaning...
just repeating Rashi.
Correct, he's just repeating Rashi, that maybe Rashi means that he's miyachid lehu makom, and that proves that he's makpid, but it's not a separate automatic tnai. And if you look on page 6 of Yemarim Makomos, you'll see a tshuva from the Igros Moshe, Moshe Feinstein, in which he writes, lo be'inan yichud makom is not a precondition, v'ahad demuva b'gemara demiyachid lo makom. So what are we going to do with the miyachid lo makom? Havinak begeder simon, says Reb Moshe, shem makpid al chefetz. The fact that he designates a place doesn't make it mukta, because he says that we put away ashmatas in a shmata drawer, right? That doesn't make it mukta. Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, and with this we'll conclude, on page 8 in Shmir Shabbos Gehilchasa, you'll see it in Ha'ara number Nun Beis, on page 8, he writes in explaining the Beis Meir that the Beis Meir writes Mukta Machmas Chisar and Kis Nikra Rak Im Kli Shemiyachid Lo Makom. That sounds like the Rav's interpretation of Rashi. But Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is not willing to accept the Beis Meir at face value. He can't interpret it in the way he seems to be saying it. One of the classical cases that we're going to see in Mukta Machmas Chisar and Kis is a camera, very sensitive, expensive. Now today you buy a camera for a couple of shekels here, but in the old days a camera was a big deal. And even today there are expensive cameras. You can pay thousands of dollars for a camera. And that's a classical case of Mukta Machmas Chisar and Kis. And Rav Shlomo Zalman says it's not necessarily so that he locks up his camera in a specific place. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman that that's not what the Beis Meir meant. He said, "Makpid al kol shinui makom shelo litzorich." You don't need a yichud makom, but rather he doesn't want it to be moved around if it's not necessary to move it around. And clearly, he understands that the haktzah here is for tiltul, not for negia, the way we saw it in a machbesh shell machbeset. Okay, Rabosai, what we're left with is a discussion about all those kinds of kelim that we discussed. And Dan, let me just add one word, and then this shiur is officially over, so that anybody who has to leave doesn't have to feel that I'm pressing you too long. And that is that in all the cases that we asked about, namely, you know, kelim that are designated for Pesach and kelim that are designated for Schora or expensive glass or things that are hanging on the walls and so forth, decorations, all those, are they Chisar and Kis or not, really boil down to our issue. If you're talking about Kpeda, then I don't know. Maybe he is Makpid, maybe he's not Makpid. But if you're talking about Miyachi Lo Makom, that's a whole different story. I don't take paper, you know, like, you know, I have clean paper, and I put it in a certain place. Or if I do, I only do so because I put my shmatas in a certain drawer. But that's not called Miyachi Lo Makom. But on the other hand, if you're talking about Pesach Dikikalim that I don't want to use during the course of the year, that for sure is Miyachi Lo Makom. He locks up the cabinet for the specific reason that he doesn't want anyone to go near there. That would be Mukta Machmas Chisar Kis. Yeah, Dan.
I have an expensive pen that I forgot in the sun. Can I bring it into the service?
Absolutely not. I hate to say it because I don't want you to lose an expensive pen.
Machmas Chisar Kis. That's by definition Machmas Chisar Kis. I'm afraid I'm going to suffer a loss.
That's what I'm saying. Forget about Chisar Kis.
You're not allowed to touch it.
Right, but Dan, forget about Chisar and Kis. Let's call it a Klisha Malachta Leisur. And a Klisha Malachta Leisur, you're only allowed to use Litzarek Gufo Litzarek Makomo. So in this case, you know what I would recommend for you? If you want to save this pen, then you know what I would recommend, Dan? Make sure that you have something caught between your teeth, and the only way you can get it out is by taking this pen and using it as a toothpick. That's called Litzar Gufa.
I'm not asking Lemaise, Shaila. I'm pointing out in principle that seems to be a contradiction here.
Why?
Because Kli Shemelachto Leisur, which also has a certain humros, when it's also Machmas Chisar and Kis, it should have a gula. It's a Machmas Chisar Kis, so you won't be damaged. But now, if I leave it in the sun, it will get damaged. It's against its own definition.
I lost you again. Whether you call
it have a kula.
I don't care. Whether you call it Chisar Kis or you call it Malach Leisur, you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos in order to protect it from the sun.
I know.
So where's the contradiction?
Why is it that so? It should be that here there should be a kula.
Why?
Why do I have this category of Machmas Chisar Kis?
Oh, that's because you want to use it. Again, if you're talking about saving a kli that's Malach Leisur, forget about Chisar Kis. You can't move it for damage purposes. You can move it with Tzarek Gufo. If I upgrade it to Kisan Kis, I can't even move it with Tzarek Gufo. So I'm not sure exactly what you mean by contradiction.
So I'm saying if I upgrade it to Kisan Kis, I should get the Kula now.
Why? There's no Kula in Kisan Kis. Adarabha, Kisan Kis is Muktzeh Mamish without any heter at all. Not even with Tzarek Gufo, nor with Tzarek Makom.
Why? Because I may be damaging it.
That's what motivates me perhaps to be mocked to it. I want to be mocked to it, but once I was mocked to it, there's no vihichinu es asher yaviu, and it becomes mukta. It's like avanim and eitzim. So the fact that now I don't want to lose it, that doesn't undermine my mukta. Now, you could ask the following question, Dan. What happens if on Erev Shabbos I make the following declaration? I say, nobody touch this thing. Nobody move it. I put it away. I need it desperately. It's very sensitive. But if the sun is beating down on it, please move it for me. What if that was my... You know, I put a sign... Stay off the grass unless it's sunny outside.
So then I fall back on Malachi Lissu.
So then I don't know. Maybe there's such a thing as a tnai in haktzah. You know, can I make a haktzah a tnai? And say, you know, I'm mocked to this. I don't want anyone going near it. But only on condition that they want to use it. Or they want to move it. Or so forth and so on. But if I want to save the object, because otherwise I'm going to take a tremendous loss... The robbers are going to steal it from me, then please do me a favor and move it. That's an interesting question.
It should make a difference now if the who's trying to move it? The Bnei Bai, or the priest himself?
It's irrelevant because he doesn't want anyone moving it.
No, but he himself can move it. He knows how to
move it. No, he only wants to move it when he needs it. Even a dentist doesn't just stop move around his utensils. He moves it when he needs it. You know, it's exclusively, it's designated for exclusive use.
The reason is, if his whole reason is because other people don't know how to move his objects, his tools, then he should be allowed to move it.
He should what?
He should be allowed to move it. For him, it's not Mahmas Chisaron Kis.
Again, Chisaron Kis means I don't want anyone to move it, not myself as well. You're asking Lu Yitzuya. He says, I want no one else except for myself to use it. Can he make a partial haktzah and not a total haktzah? It's like, you know, the famous question about the Shliach Tzibur who gets up to read the Torah and he says, I want everyone to be Yotzei my Kriya except for Reuven. I don't want him to be Yotzei. Can he make such a statement? You know, I don't want anyone to use or move my Kli except for myself. Can he take himself out of the pale of the Muktzah, Haktzah? I don't know.
I think that in general goes without saying, because a dentist, he knows how to deal with his tools. He never has in mind himself to prohibit himself from moving it. He only has in mind to prohibit everybody else.
I don't know, again, I'm not a dentist, but I think if you ask the dentist, he would tell you that he's afraid it might fall from his hands. He's afraid that it might get scraped on the wall. You know, he's going to be careful with it. Hopefully others will be careful with it, but if it's not necessary, he doesn't want anyone to move it. So he puts it away.
It's like the case of Bris Mila, where the Mael, once he puts down the scalpel for the Mila, right? So he knows that that's the same type of thing as the dentist tool. So he can only hold it or move it as long as it comes time. Once he puts it down, that's it. Then it's
yeah, and the Mael is not going to play around with it either, you know.
Right.
The Mael is also going to be very careful not to move it unless it's absolutely necessary. That's what it means that he designates a space for it.
The case of he's doing the Bris Mila on Shabbos.
Ah, that's really a different story.
Immediately becomes Muktzeh. And once a person doesn't have the use for it, right, then that's a situation where he puts it down in a place that it's safe, but he can't start moving it again because there's no purpose in that.
Absolutely. Okay, Rabosai. If you're mentioning paper, again, according to the Rav says that why is something considered muchan and not mukta, it's because of the shame kli. Until Nechemya came along and created an Isur Tiltul Keli. Paper doesn't have a shame kli.
Right.
And therefore it might be mukta b'toras etzim vavonim. And it could very well be that even if I couldn't care less about the value of niyar, today paper costs less than a fraction of a penny, nevertheless, it doesn't have a shame kli. And therefore, even Reb Shimon would agree that if in the absence of a shame kli, you'd have to be making it before Shabbos, like the case of the stone that you have to designate for use before Shabbos. The Mishnah Berurah writes, in fact, about Niyar Ha'omei L'Ksiva in Sifkat and Gimli, writes that Osir B'Tiltul Kedin Mukta Machmas Chisarin Kis. And apparently the value of paper that was designated for writing was something of significant value back in the time of the Mishnah Berurah. The Rav Shulchan Aruch writes also what we said before, that Niyar doesn't have a shame kli. And whether you go like the Mishnah Berurah that Niyar has the status of Mukta Machmas Chisarin Kis, or if you take the approach of the Rav Shulchan Aruch that it's not a shame kli, there's no heter of moving this paper, Litzar Gufa, Litzar Makomo. Now, whether or not situation has changed today, or for example, let's say you put the paper into a Machberes, then maybe even the loose sheets, the clean sheets that haven't been used in a Machberes, are not Mukta, because now it's part of a kli. And in addition, it's not worth that much today. So if you let your children play with this paper, and you don't care that they ruin it, then it's no longer in the getter of Mukta Machmas Chisarin Kis. Again, the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa has a long discussion here about things like Bulim and Matafot, Mismachim, whether they do come under Chisarin Kis or not. In fact, the Mishnah Berurah addresses the case of Kalim or Tmunot or Sha'onim, all these things that are put up on the wall. The Chazon Ish is of the opinion that once you put up something on the wall and you don't want it moved, that already by definition makes it Mukta Machmas Chisarin Kis. And this is fascinating because it could be that something that's a klisha malachta leheter becomes through kapidle or miyachile makom into chisarin kis. Lemaisa, there's a whole machlokas aposkim here with regard to things that are hung up on the wall that have no great significance, whether you're allowed to move them on Shabbos. And you can take a look in the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa here on page 9. There's so much here going on over here. For example, Kalim Ha'omdim L'Schora, there's a Ramah here and a Mishnah Berurah, Kleis Chuchit Machmas Chisarin Kis, and it might fall and break, it's fragile. All this is discussed by the Betzel Chachma, which you'll see on page 8. There's a lot of discussion here. It's not always easy to determine what is a Kli Mukta Machmas Chisarin Kis, how do you classify it and when do you classify it as such? But I meant in this year to give a certain framework, an introduction, and B'li Neder, at some future time, we hope to go into the more nitty-gritty details and the machlokasin that come to the, that come to the surface that in various specific him. All right, we'll stop here.